Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This month's program is titled, Leading the Reluctant. Tom, sooner or later, most every business owner will find themselves in a position of having a skilled employee that is simply not motivated to do their best. The question is always, how do I encourage this individual to be a team player? Thankfully, this month's presentation can provide some wisdom in terms of how to encourage that individual to be a team player and make the extra effort that's often required for their position.
Bill, this month's speaker is the author of the best-selling book entitled The Porcupine Principles, How to Move Prickly People to Preferred Outcomes. He shares about how the reactions we see on the surface are usually caused by one of three underlying needs. And when these needs are validated, the individual is more able to move forward to the desired outcome.
Well, that's right, Tom. You know, it's a great book and it's a quick read. Yeah, he also shares a very practical way to handle gossip in the workplace. But we'll let our audience hear about that one as they listen to this presentation. Well, this month's presenter is Stephen Irison. Stephen is the founder and owner of Aurora Point LLC, an international speaking and leadership development firm. As a keynote speaker and a relational leadership expert, he has spoken to over 500 audiences during the last 10 years on the subject of creating a leadership culture. He is a master storyteller and a professional member of the National Speakers Association. He's also a certified speaking professional, a designation that only 900 speakers worldwide have earned. And now, with Leading the Reluctant, here is Stephen Irison with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
I'm going to ask you to picture your perfect day at work. Let me guess. It starts with a team meeting. Everybody's excited, positive, giving each other high fives, encouragement. Let me guess how it ends. A perfect day ends with everybody giving each other a high five, laughing about the results, excited that they've worked together, satisfied with their own individual efforts, and it's just been the perfect day. Now let me guess. Your perfect day did not include having to deal with difficult personalities. It didn't involve having to have a conversation with an individual or employee who didn't want to follow through on a responsibility, or maybe didn't understand the expectations or created their own expectations. Odds are your perfect day didn't involve a grumpy customer or a change order that you've got to work into the project now. Your perfect day just didn't have anything to do with problems or complaining. The perfect day. You're probably thinking right now, that would be amazing. Wouldn't it be great to just get through 24 hours without conflict, without the tension, without having to lead the reluctant? Of course it would. But you and I both know that that's not reality. You see, our reality in leadership and in business is that there will be people, for whatever reason, who just push back a little bit. And somehow, we've got to find a way to engage them and to keep them moving forward, to be a part of the team. That's what you and I are going to focus on in the time that we have right now. Figuring out how, as leaders, we can be more effective and persuasive while having to lead the reluctant. I'm going to talk with you about 5 principles that I have found to be incredibly effective on being more persuasive as a leader without individuals feeling like we are forcing or commanding, but engaging them so that they take ownership of their own part of the experience. We're going to look at why people sometimes react the way they do and some of the behaviors that manifest themselves and how we can work with those as well. And then I'm going to dig into just a couple of these principles and show you a couple of techniques of how you can start to think differently and lead the conversations to a better outcome. Well, let's get started. Picture in your mind, not the perfect day, But the kind of day where you just feel like you need to get away from everything and everybody. It's just a personal time off kind of day. And so you seize it. You get up in the morning, you drive out to a nice secluded area where you can take a walk in the forest. You're all alone. And every step you take, you can feel the pressure and the load lifting off your shoulders. You're beginning to feel good about life. And then to your horror, you hear voices. Not in your head. But somewhere down that path, you can hear people talking and they're moving your direction. You don't want to have anything to do with them. And so you look for a way to escape. You take a different trail and you begin to work your way through the forest and up the hill. Soon the voices fade away. You can hear the chirping of birds and life is good again. And then you turn the corner and as you begin to make your way around that corner, you look down and you realize you're about ready to run into a porcupine who probably got up this morning and said to himself, I need a mental health day. He's had a stressful week. He's on his favorite path, on his way to his favorite bridge over by a little stream, minding his own business, and he looks up and sees you coming straight at him. Now, I'm going to stop right there and ask you, what would you do in that moment when you realize you're about ready to run into a porcupine? Now, when I ask that question in programs where I'm teaching leaders, people tend to respond pretty quickly. Some say, I'd stop. Others say, hey, I'd turn around and go back the other direction. A few people say, well, I'd go way around it. Or maybe grab a stick and kind of poke at it, and hopefully it would go away. Recently, I've had people even say, I'd stop and get out my phone and I'd pull up my camera and take a picture because nobody's going to believe it. Either way, the standard answer is I do whatever I could to stay away from that porcupine. Now I'm going to ask you to bring this back to work. Does this sound at all a little like the interactions you have with certain people? You know, you get up in the morning, you have a list of things to do, you're working through that to-do list, life is good. You have a meeting to attend, you gather up some things, you begin to move through the building, and you turn the corner and you look up and you see your prickly person. You just thought of somebody, didn't you? Yeah, we all do, because we all have at least one. And what do? You do pretty much the same thing you do when you see a porcupine on the path. You stop. You turn around and go back the way you've come. Some of us will work all the way around the building so we don't have to go by their desk. I've never had anybody say, you know, I'd stop and get out my phone and take a picture of them. It wouldn't happen. But we do whatever we can to avoid them because we just don't want to have the encounter. We just don't. Well, think about that person that came to your mind when I said you're a prickly person. And I know you thought of somebody. Think now about the last time you had some tension, some conflict with them. On a piece of paper, I'd like you to write down a one or two word description of what you believe caused the conflict with that person. Just take a moment right now and do that. A one or two word description of what was the cause, in your opinion. Now, I'd like you to write down a one or two word description of how you felt in that moment. Yeah, how you felt in that moment. Now, don't worry, this isn't going to become a therapy session of any kind. We won't really dig into the feelings so much, but the feelings are a unique indicator of some things that are going on in our minds that influence how we interact with people. But what I'd like you to do right now is to focus on the one or two words that you wrote down that were the cause of the conflict. Some people will say, the cause was she lied to me, or they failed to follow through on a responsibility. Some people say, well, they're just incompetent. Sometimes I hear people say they're just chronic complainers, pessimistic, make promises that they never keep. Or it might be that they were disrespectful in their tone or their body language. Whatever it may be, we can create a long list of the different causes that create conflict, at least from our perception. But what fascinates me is that when we look at those causes, What we see is just things that are on the surface. We don't really see what's beneath it or what might be behind those causes. It's almost like porcupine quills. When you see the porcupine, you don't necessarily see a nice little cuddly critter. What you see is those quills that could hurt. And the same thing happens when we have conflict with other people. We see on the surface things that make us want to avoid them. And yet, what we really should be doing as leaders is looking past the surface things to have a better understanding of what might be going on internally or within the context of the conflict. Every single person has basic needs. If you get into the psychology of it, we could go really deep in all of the different elements of the psyche and the emotions, but I'm just going to break it down into three basic needs that every single one of us have. You have them and I do too. The first one is the need for respect. We all want to be respected. A second need is to be valued. I look at that word valued, and I think about two different aspects of it. We want to feel like people value us as individuals and our work as valuable. And at the same time, we also want to make sure that what we are doing is contributing value. If we feel like what we're doing is just mundane and monotonous and has no real sense of purpose, we might get a little agitated. So we want value. Respect, value, and then the third basic need that I believe every one of us has is the need for autonomy, or another word would be control. I'm pretty sure you know what I mean by that. You see, we all want to have control. We want to have a say. We want to be able to do our work without being micromanaged, right? Now, what's interesting is that those are the basic needs that are beneath the reactions that we see on the surface. But we don't always identify those needs. What we see is people who are dominating. They do all the talking, won't let anybody else talk. They talk louder. They become forceful and insist on things being done their way. Or maybe it's the reaction of retaliation. They find ways to get back at individuals. Maybe leave a project unfinished so that it disrupts somebody else's outcome, or leave people out of an email that might be helpful to them. Or a third reaction you might see is people who will isolate. It's the opposite of dominating. They don't do any talking at all. They just get really quiet and pull back. You can ask them, hey, are you okay? Is everything working out? And they'll smile and say, oh yeah, everything's fine. But you know and I know that it's not fine. They're just isolating. It's a crazy thing. And what we end up doing is we end up reacting to their reactions when we should be looking at those surface things and wondering, okay, is there a basic need, respect, value, or autonomy that's not being met right now? And that, because it is off balance, could be the reason for the conflict. The challenge in business leadership is to not react to the reactions, but to slow down long enough to be thoughtful so that you can lead people through those misunderstandings or the conflict that has arisen. It's not really any different than running into a porcupine on a path. When the event itself happens, the cause of the tension happens, your brain immediately goes to a belief about the circumstances or about the individual. And based on what you believe, you begin to take certain actions. Now, action might be productive or it might be unproductive. It might be confrontational or it might be conversational. Whatever it may be, your actions are a direct result of what you believe. So think about that porcupine on the path. What would you do? If you said, I'd stop, I'd go around, I'd turn and go back the way I came, could it be that that event triggered a belief, something that you believed about porcupines? Now, when I ask people in my programs, tell me a little bit about what you know or believe about porcupines, I get all kinds of answers. The one that I hear the most often is that porcupines can shoot their quills. And because they can shoot their quills, they're dangerous and we should avoid them at all costs. But here's the truth. Porcupines do not have a projectile propulsion system in their posterior. They can't shoot those quills. But based on what we have believed, we take certain actions that in reality are not necessary. And what I know about our interactions with people is that sometimes what we believe about that individual or what we believe about the circumstance is not always the truth. It's just something that's been fueled by past experience or our interpretations or our assumptions. And based on what we're believing, we end up taking the actions. And sometimes the actions are not necessary. What is necessary for you and I as leaders is to make sure that when there is conflict, we look at all of the elements, not just at the surface issues. What are the basic needs? Why are the reactions taking place? What are maybe some of the beliefs that are fueling all of this tension from both sides? And then we can begin to lead to a preferred result. Just like the people do at the World Championship Porcupine Races. Yes, you heard me correct. The World Championship Porcupine Races. Every year for 40 plus years on the 4th of July in a little town in Idaho, they host the World Championship Porcupine Races. It's an absolutely phenomenal and funny event. But it is that event that began to help me understand that there are some ways that you and I can be much more effective at working through the conflicts. Let me paint the picture for you. A little tiny town in a small valley tucked between the mountains in Idaho. In that town is a little high school, and behind the high school, a football field. On the 4th of July, a race course has been outlined in the middle of that field with a fence. There's a starting line and a finish line. And contestants, competitors, have all gathered together. Each team represents two human beings and a porcupine. Now, here is the challenge. The goal? Get your porcupine to the finish line before any other competitors can do the same. The problem is that porcupines do not usually run in straight lines. And yet somehow you have to find a way to persuade your porcupine to get to that goal line before anybody else can do that. But you're not allowed to push, poke, or prod. You do have to be persuasive. Now each team has some basic tools to work with. They have a broom and they have a trash can. Those tools become very important in the process of reaching the goal. And every team has the same tools. But not every team has the right strategy or knows how to use the tools. What I've witnessed over the years is that the championship winners are the ones who know how to effectively work together, be focused on their goal, but most importantly, use their strategy to work with the prickly partner to be successful. This is starting to sound a whole lot like work, isn't it? I know, it does. You have a goal to achieve, and you have a partner, you have a participant who does not necessarily want to race, and yet somehow you need to lead them to the right outcomes. I'm going to share with you now the five principles that I've learned from the races that I apply to these difficult situations that we've been looking at. Each principle is based on a specific element of the actual race. So we're going to look at the starting line, the broom, the trash can, the importance of the fence, and then the finish line. Now, as you hear each principle, I want to remind you to keep these within the context of leading the reluctant, and it will begin to make sense to you as each one benefits the other. Let's begin with the principle of the starting line. Here it comes. Everyone deserves to be respected. Everyone deserves to be respected. Now, that's different than what most of us have come to believe or to adopt as our general practice. So you see, what we've learned is that people earn respect. I will earn your respect by delivering certain expectations, meeting those expectations, and you will earn my respect in return by measuring up to certain standards that I have in mind. The problem with that, especially when we're dealing with the reluctant, is that when we have the expectation that they will earn respect, we've already put them at a disadvantage. And in many ways, we are as well. You see, the very nature of having to earn something from each other puts us into a bit of a competition. But if we change the way we're thinking and we look at the principle differently, everyone deserves to be respected. Whoa, that changes our thought patterns. That changes how we interact with others. That changes actually the nature of the relationship. Especially when we're in a moment of conflict or tension, if we have in mind that they deserve to be respected, we are going to speak differently, look differently, interact differently because of our respect for the individual. We don't take into consideration where they grew up, their educational level, their ethnicity, their religious or political persuasions, the methodology that they choose. Those things are just external elements of humanity. If they have a heartbeat, they deserve to be respected. And if we begin to treat them in that way, they sense something different when there is tension. What they are typically expecting is some sort of debate, reprimand, correction, demanding. But what they experience with this new approach is a desire for collaboration, some kind of a compromise, an understanding in a conversation. And that helps us to get off to a better start. When the race begins at the real porcupine races, I can tell you that every competitor has a healthy respect for their prickly partner. Speaking of when the race begins, as soon as the announcer shouts race, they lift up the trash cans and the porcupine comes out of the can, ready to take action. But they typically do one of three things: a hard left turn, a hard right turn, or an about face, and they try to crawl back up in the can. But they hardly ever run straight for the goal line. That is when the principle of the broom comes into play. The competitors will take the broom and they will place it in front of the porcupine's face. So if it goes too far to the left, they put the broom in front of its face and they inform it, yeah, this isn't an option available to it. And so it'll begin to then move in a different direction, preferably the direction you were hoping. If it goes too far to the right, they move the broom over and they put it in front of its face to redirect it toward the goal line. Now remember, the competitors are not allowed to push, poke, or prod their porcupine. So the broom is not about forcing, it's about guiding. And that really is what the principle is all about. Here comes the principle of the broom. The best decisions come from timely, meaningful information and clarity of direction. How many times do you and I have conflict because people did not have the right information when they needed it, or the information they had was not meaningful and tied into a better understanding of the project? I can tell you that many of the conflicts I've had to work through are related directly to the lack of clarity of our direction. When leaders don't point the way, people will begin to create their own way. And that sometimes unfolds into a collision of ideas, personalities, and opinions. The one thing I'd like you to remember in regards to the principle of the broom is the phrase, the best decisions. The best decisions is about making sure that we are engaging other people in their own opportunities to make decisions on how they will move forward. Just like the competitors inform the porcupine then makes decisions on where it's going to go. And we need to make sure that we're doing the same thing, not forcing people, but informing them. When we do this correctly, we start to validate the three basic needs that every person has: respect, value, and the big one, autonomy. They feel like they have a say in what's going to happen next. So keep in mind that your goal is to provide guidance. And the best way to do that is to consider what kind of information is the other individual or individuals needing to have, or information that they want to have that will help them make better decisions. But make sure that you don't jump to any conclusions and assume the information you want them to have is what they need. The best way you can help them is to ask better questions and to listen for what they believe they need or for what might be missing in the context of the circumstances. Your ability to fill in the blanks will help them begin to move towards the goal. The next principle is the principle of the trash can. Now, the trash can is a very important tool. Not only is it used to bring the competitor to the starting line, but it's also used to contain it before the race begins, and sometimes used as a means by which to prevent a retreat during the middle of the race, when maybe the broom isn't working so well. I have found this principle to be especially helpful to me, primarily because many times when there is a conflict, one of the parties has been giving thought to the event, and the other party is sometimes not even aware that there was a conflict or a problem. And when the two come together, the one who's been contemplating this whole scenario has already rehearsed in their minds at least 3 or 4 times a conversation and a conclusion. But when they bring it up to the other person looks at them and says, "I don't know what you're talking about." And that then begins to inflame the situation even more. And I have to confess, sometimes that's me. I just want to reach the goal. I don't want to waste any time getting there. And I just want this conversation to be done. And when I find that the other party isn't really ready to have the dialogue, I'm not always respectful. And so the principle of the trash can is about containment. My need to contain my drive and to just slow down until we're on the same page and have an opportunity to have a better conversation. And that leads me to the principle. Here it is. Thoughtful conversations can help to achieve positive solutions. I'm going to say that part again. Thoughtful conversations can help to achieve positive solutions. And here's the second part that's just as important. Thoughtless confrontations will leave you running in circles. Thoughtful conversations. It really is the best way to move together to a preferred outcome. But as I mentioned, sometimes we're not very thoughtful. We react too quickly before we've taken time to think, or we thought too much and not given the other party the, what I call, the courtesy of time for contemplation. When we can both come together and have reasonable dialogue, that's going to get us a lot closer to a preferred result. Sometimes during the race, a porcupine just doesn't respond well to the broom. It might turn around and run in the wrong direction. It might move towards the fence and try to burrow underneath it. And so the competitors have to find a way to use that trash can to just slow things down and regroup and start over. And you and I need to do the same thing. As you think about the principle of the trash can, thoughtful conversation can help to achieve positive solutions. Give thought to when's the right time and the right place to have a conversation. The right time may be as soon as possible, or it could be as soon as reasonable. The moment you want to talk about it, the other person just got off the phone with an angry customer. Probably not the right time to have that conversation. The right place? Well, the right place is usually in private, preferably a neutral place, if at all possible. And also keep in mind that the idea of the trash can being a place of containment is that oftentimes we just need to allow people to vent, to have a sense that it's okay to express some frustration and then let it go. And oftentimes, that's all they needed to do, and it is over, and they can get back to the race. The fourth principle has to do with the fence. You see, the fence is a really key part of the strategy. First of all, when you think about that fence in the middle of the football field, you need to keep in mind that before the race ever begins, before the crowds ever show up to witness the event, someone has taken the time to lay out the course and to build that fence. The fence is never constructed while the race is happening. It's already been defined. And sometimes when we don't have a healthy sense of our boundaries in an organization, in our relationships, we make up the rules as we go. We create more conflict. Here is the principle of the fence. Boundaries well defined lead to greater possibilities. This is so important, I'm going to state it again. Boundaries well defined lead to greater possibilities. I have found that when I work with organizations that are in conflict, when we can get everybody in a room and talk about, I like to call them rules of engagement, how we will interact with each other. What do you prefer when things are said or done? What do you want to have happen? We get better results. When teams know that certain individuals have certain responsibilities and other people have different roles and they're well-defined, they can work better together, just like the Porcupine Racing Team. One person has the broom, one person has the trash can. They don't try to compete with each other, they work with each other. And better defined boundaries will lead to greater possibilities. Let me give you a couple of examples of how boundaries, well defined, can help with teams. Here's one. If an individual of the team is upset with another person because of a misunderstanding, a failure to follow through, wherever it may be, they are expected to go to that person they are upset with and to discuss it with them, and they're not supposed to go and talk with a bunch of other people before they have the discussion face to face. That's a fair boundary. And most everyone on a team would prefer that. Here's another example. When we are having conversation, and if there's been misunderstanding, our boundary is you will listen until the other one has fully expressed their idea or concern, and you won't interrupt. And the same rule applies in reverse. You won't mind if I give you just one more example of boundaries. I didn't think so. We call it, on our team, the gossip policy. Now, it's not written into our policies, but it's generally known that gossip is not to be tolerated. We just won't permit it because gossip undermines morale. It begins to create wedges in relationships, creates so much confusion, and it wastes our time. And for those of us who are in leadership roles in business, when we're having to put out fires, we're ending up using a lot of our emotional, mental, intellectual time and energy to just, well, it feels like we're having to be parents instead of being leaders. And so we created what we call the gossip policy. And it's simply this. If someone comes to you as a supervisor or manager, leader, and they begin to gossip, and you can tell when it's gossip and not genuine concern, when they start to gossip, you stop them. One of the rare times that I like to interrupt people. And you say, oh, sounds important. Let's go and talk with that person right now. And so it just starts with the phrase, let's go. Odds are the person who's gossiping is going to say, oh, no, it's not that important, which then leads you to the second part of our process, and that is, oh, well, I'll go and discuss it with them because it sounds important. But here's the catch. If you use this technique, you got to make sure you use this. As soon as you say, I'll go, you need to say, and I'd like your permission to tell them where I heard it. Now, they're not going to want to give you their permission, so they're going to say no. So two steps have already been achieved. Let's go, no. I'll go. No. And that's when you use the phrase, then we need to let it go and not discuss it again. The chronic gossip that you're always having to deal with, when you use those three steps, let's go, I'll go, let it go, they begin to move in a different direction because they don't like the fact that you're not entertaining the gossip anymore. But I got to tell you this, if you're going to use that technique, everybody in your team needs to know the method, because the chronic gossip will just start to move to other people and they'll start gossiping about you. Boundaries well defined lead to greater possibilities. During the porcupine races, you'll begin to see exactly why that principle is so important. The starting line, the broom, the trash can, all of those are important, but the fence becomes critical to success. Here's what I found by talking with some of the champions of years past. They tell me that their goal is to move their porcupine as quickly as they can, not straight to the goal line, but to the fence. Because when the porcupine gets to the fence, it finds a stationary object that does not allow it any forward motion. It sees behind it a trash can that's kind of keeping it from a retreat, and a broom that keeps informing it which approaches or angles they're not going to be allowed to take. And then it looks down the fence line, and it sees no obstacles in its way, and it begins to move of its own accord to the finish line. Isn't that a brilliant strategy? Make sure that you're informing, you're guiding, you're containing things, and that you're giving a better sense of boundaries so that the individuals you're working with can see no obstacles between them and a preferred outcome, and then get out of their way and let them begin to move towards that finish line. And that brings me finally to the principle of the finish line, and it's simple. A shared success is always better than standing all alone. I know in leadership we often hear people say, you know, it's lonely at the top. It's tough to be a leader. Well, here's my belief. If you're lonely at the top, you probably did it wrong. You should be involving people and mentoring and creating a leadership culture so that everyone feels like they are a part of and own their part in the process, wherever that may be. You see, in the porcupine races, you can get tired of your prickly partner spinning around in circles at the starting line. And you can run all the way to the finish line and cross the line and say, hey, I did it. But the reality is that you don't win the competition until you get your prickly partner across the line with you. And you and I have the same problem at work. We have prickly partners who sometimes we just shake our heads and we just want to throw up our hands and say, fine, be who you are, do what you're doing. I'm tired of it. I'm just going to go and do my thing. And we don't have the luxury of leaving them behind. We have to work with them. So when you use the starting line of respect, the broom of guidance, the trash can of containment, the fence that really helps to define boundaries, and a better appreciation of moving together to the finish line, you will end up with better results. Well, I don't know if you've noticed this, but from the very beginning of this program, I've been using the principles in our conversation. I have. We talked about needs and reactions and understanding. That's information that was important. I've emphasized the importance of better conversations and listening. And we've talked about a sense of direction based on boundaries, a structure. And there has been a structure to our process. In fact, that's how I want to just finish up our time together. Because really what I've been trying to help you understand and equip you to do is to work through conflict and manage change by leading your people through a process. In fact, here's what I'd like you to do as we wrap it up. I'd like you to write the word process down the left side of your page, P-R-O-C-E-S-S. Each letter represents the process that we've been exploring. Here it comes. The P is problem. You begin, the starting line by defining the conflict. What is the issue at hand right here? R stands for resistance. Just step back for a moment and assess what's off balance, what's not being clarified, what needs do I need to be aware of? And could the resistance be a result of those things? So problem, resistance. O stands for obstacles. Take some time to just ask, what perceptions are at play here, what assumptions on both parties might be in mind, and clarify what those are. C stands for communication. The more conversation you can have, and reasonable conversation, by focusing on the facts and clarifying the information, the better you're going to have a good process. So problem, resistance, obstacles, communication. The E stands for expectations. Oftentimes, our conflicts are simply a result of expectations that have not been clearly understood or clearly expressed. So define what's the intent and talk about the shared objectives. S, specify the actions and the commitments that each of you are going to take as you move forward. As a team, what are we going to do together? Specify those actions. Is there a to-do list? What are the next steps? And then the final S, solutions and resolutions. What are the solutions we're looking for? What are the resolutions that we want? And have agreement on that, because that really is the end result. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking a little time to think about how you as a leader are becoming a champion with everyone on your team. Don't let the conflict be an event. Let it be the beginning of your process.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.